Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have Mark Price. He is a technical trainer at Optimizely. He's the author of C# 9 and .NET 5. Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And I'm going to just dive right into your book because your book is huge. Mammoth. Let's talk about this edition and let's start with the fact that the name is C# 9 and .NET 5. Now, I know, and I think most programmers have a pretty good idea of what is meant by C# 9. But the truth is, we don't talk very much about what's meant by .NET 5. And without getting into technical details about frameworks and stuff, what does .NET 5 bring to the party?
.NET 5 is the way that you get C# 9. So part of .NET 5 is the compiler. The internal name for the compiler is Roslyn. And so when you want to use a new language feature, say you've heard about the records feature that was introduced in C# 9, and you say, that sounds great, I want to be able to use that, you can only use it with the C# 9 compiler, because the compiler is the thing that actually will then understand what that word record means and translates it into the underlying intermediate language. Now, to get the compiler, you have to download the .NET SDK. And for C# 9, you need to download the .NET 5 SDK, because that's the kind of oldest version of .NET that includes the C# 9 compiler. Coming this year, later in November, will be .NET 6. And if you download the .NET 6 SDK, you'll get an updated version of Roslyn, which will include the C# 10 compiler, as well as the Visual Basic 14 or whatever the number of Visual Basic is these days. It's so high these days. But yeah, so that's the relationship between the C# compiler and the .NET. You need to install a certain version of .NET in order to get the correct compiler.
Great. My impression with .NET 5, or more accurately with C# 9, is that they're taking tiny steps, but significant steps, towards functional programming. Can you talk a little bit about what functional programming is? Am I right that C# is heading in that direction? And is that a good thing or bad thing?
Yes, I can absolutely talk about functional programming. So looking back over the history of C#, it's quite fascinating. C# 1 and C# 2 that came out in 2002 to 2005, that range, was definitely 100% and general-purpose object-oriented programming language. Had great support for defining your own types as classes or structs to get more efficient memory usage, but it was very much object-oriented programming, classical object-oriented programming. But starting with C# 3, which introduced the concept of lambda expressions, which is kind of nameless functions, you start to see a very functional programming style, or language features that enable a functional programming style, being introduced to the language. And kind of looking at the broad overview and that history of C# and what's happened over the last 9 or 10 versions, it's clear that the C# designers really love this kind of functional style. Microsoft does have a language, F#, which is purely functional, and there's almost a little bit of envy of that language. And if you were to make a list of all of the purely functional programming language features, what Microsoft has been doing and the C# design team have been doing since about 2008 is going through that list, checking them off, adding individual features to the C# language. So anyone who really loves a functional programming style and wants to employ that when they're writing C# code can do so. And so you get this benefit of a classical object-oriented programming language that has a lot of great APIs, built-in types for doing things like working with databases and working with the file system and doing security. You've got all of that great API, but over time, C# has been able to employ this more classical functional programming style. And one of the key features of that is immutability of data. So once you've created an object, it should never be able to change. Now, getting into why that is so important starts to go beyond my experience. But the records feature that was introduced in C# 9, one of the things that that does is allow you to define something that feels like a type, looks like a type, has properties and so on, but it's immutable. And that can give performance benefits. And more importantly, it enforces correctness of your code to avoid some of the common programming problems that you might get with something that is mutable, that can change over time. And so if you look at C# 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, over those different major version numbers, what Microsoft has been doing is checking off a couple of new features. So Lambda expressions that I mentioned for C# 3. In C# 6, you start to see some ways of doing pattern matching so that you can do switch statements and if statements based on the shape of the type and whether it has certain characteristics. Things like link and all of those extension methods, transforming sequences in different ways is a very functional kind of way of working with your data and transforming your data. Also supports immutability as well. And C# 7 and 8 adding more features which are useful for functional programming. So I think one of the things that C# developers who don't have a background in functional programming, including myself really, is it's been quite difficult when Microsoft says, oh, C# 6 has this new feature, because it's only one of those checkboxes in a list of 100. It's sometimes hard to really see the benefit. And I almost feel that it won't be until perhaps C# 10 or 11, and having a bit of a understanding of functional programming, it will only be then when you can see the whole picture and how all of those features work together that you'll really be able to see the benefits, particularly if you don't have that background in functional programming. So personally, part of my journey in understanding how these features can really help programmers, my plan is that after I've delivered the final drafts and the sixth edition is published in November this year, I'm going to be spending my Christmas, 2 months over Christmas, learning F# and then go back to C# and see how these features really work. I was talking to a colleague a couple of months ago, and he had actually implemented an ASP.NET Core website using F# rather than C#. And he recommended that as a good way of learning functional programming style. You've got to use a real functional language really to get to grips with the benefits of functional programming. So that's why he wanted to use F#, even though some things are easier in C#, but he reckoned that was a good way of learning it. And by trying to implement a website based on ASP.NET Core, it's a practical thing. And things like defining your models with an MVC style website using immutable records is a really can improve performance, particularly for, say, scalable websites. So I'm quite excited to be able to take that journey myself and then apply it to maybe the next edition of the C# book next year.
How much has functional programming, the extent that Microsoft has put it in so far, how much has that informed the book that's currently out?
There are two chapters. So chapter 4 is about writing functions and debugging them and unit testing. It's all about functions, kind of a little unit of code. And what I did in the current edition, C# 9 edition, was to show examples of implementing a function like generating the Fibonacci sequence, a mathematical sequence, using an imperative style, which is more like you're step-by-step following a recipe, and then implementing it as well using a more functional style, using a Lambda expression, which is much more succinct. And if you, once a program becomes comfortable with that, I think it genuinely does become easier and more correct to write your code. Can avoid some of these bugs which are introduced by having state that has been changed between the time that you maybe first created it and the time that you're now accessing it. Very subtle bugs can be introduced by that kind of state change, and functional programming style can avoid that. So I'm hoping that that chapter that kind of shows you both the imperative style and the functional style helps to solidify maybe some of the visual differences. And then later in the link chapter, we talk more about the functional style that is more about transforming a sequence of data.
One of the issues with link, which of course is an extremely powerful and useful part of C#, is that it can be very hard to debug because it's hard to know what's happening inside a complex link statement. Now, there is a product called OzCode that helps with that, but setting aside third-party additions, Do you see link as a mixed blessing, or talk to me a little bit about debugging and dealing with link?
Yes, I agree. Debugging complex link statements can become a nightmare. A third-party product, which I have found quite useful in understanding what's happening in my code sometimes, is LinkPad. So I would like to see more tools built into Visual Studio that would allow you to really understand what's happening deeper inside a more complex link query like that. Perhaps something that can expose the underlying expression trees which are being built for you based on all of the different things. Another concept that I find that some developers struggle with is links deferred execution, and this differentiation between writing the query, which I try and stress is what you're building there is a question. It's not executing yet until you either call one of the two methods like toArray or toList or toDictionary, or when you enumerate over it using, say, a for each statement. And trying to impress on developers who are using it is that during that, as you're looping through, if perhaps it's doing some kind of processing that does take a certain amount of time, and that the original data underneath that link query is changing or could be changing, then you will see those changes happen as you're enumerating through it because of this deferred execution model. That can be quite tricky to handle as well. And that, I suppose, does go back to this functional programming style and this immutability. And this is why it's so key that the data that you're working on is immutable, so that you don't have those kind of subtle bugs that only happen because of timing issues, for example. But yeah, better debugging tools would be something that I would really appreciate, and I think all C# developers would appreciate. It remains to be seen what new features Microsoft adds into Visual Studio 2022, which I'm hoping will come out the same day that .NET 6 does. Early previews are coming this summer, so that'll be exciting.
Yes, I want to talk about what might be, if you have any insight into what might be in the next edition of Visual Studio, because that's a very exciting opportunity. But let me bring you back to something that's more fundamental, has been in C# for a long time, which is expression trees. And can you talk a little bit why a programmer would need to or want to know about expression trees?
Partly, I think a developer would want to know about expression trees is to help in situations like debugging link queries. Because when you're writing these complex link queries, when you're maybe doing filtering using where and ordering, and you've got maybe nested queries in there, if you understand how that query then gets translated into an expression tree, it would help you then understand why maybe you're seeing results that you're not expecting. Expression trees, it's definitely kind of one of the cooler areas of C# and how it works. But it's something that I think most 99% of C# developers probably have never looked at and consider it kind of an advanced thing that is too complicated. But I do think it's the kind of area where if you can put in that a little bit more effort, it does pay off because you get that deeper understanding about what's really happening underneath.
Great. We have not touched on at all how C# interfaces, if you'll pardon that expression, with other .NET 5 frameworks. And the one that I'm thinking about is how C# 9 interacts with the various database frameworks. Do you feel comfortable talking about that for a few minutes?
Absolutely. So one of the interesting things about talking to the databases using C# 9 is that it's not a core part of .NET 5. So when you've installed the .NET 5 SDK, you've got a whole wide variety of APIs and types for doing most things, except for working with data. And so if you're building an application and you need to work with data in Microsoft SQL Server or a cross-platform database like SQLite, commonly used in mobile apps, or even if you want to use a NoSQL type database like Cassandra or MongoDB, Azure Cosmos DB, all these cloud NoSQL type databases. What you've now got is something called Entity Framework Core, and those are separate packages. So you would add some package references into your C# project file, and it'll go out to Microsoft's NuGet server and download those packages. Now, what the Entity Framework Core team has been doing is synchronizing with each release of modern .NET. So for .NET Core 3, there was an Entity Framework Core 3. For .NET 5, last November, there was an Entity Framework Core 5. But what's also sort of interesting with Entity Framework Core is that it's not actually tied to that version of .NET. So the only requirement to use those Entity Framework Core 5 packages is .NET Standard 2.1, which is actually supported by Entity Framework, is supported by .NET Core 3.1, for example. So you could use Entity Framework Core 5, or possibly even 6, with a .NET Core 3.1 website. Perhaps you created that a year or two ago, and you want to use the latest features in Entity Framework Work core, but you don't want to upgrade yet to .NET 5 or .NET 6. So that bit of a diversion there. But anyway, so Entity Framework Core is building a lot of the features now. They're almost at parity with the older legacy Entity Framework that was part of .NET Framework. So there's a lot of C# developers who have a lot of experience with building applications for .NET Framework. They're used to the Entity Framework, the old version 6.3, I think is most recent version, 6.4 perhaps. That's been around for over a decade now. And the Entity Framework Core team have been slowly rebuilding that, making it more flexible so it can work with more modern data stores like those NoSQL-type databases, cloud-type databases, as well as the traditional relational databases like SQL Server and Oracle. So supporting both of those, making it cross-platform, and now implementing enough of the more advanced features, the less frequently used features, so that you any developer who's used to using the older version can now migrate to EF Core. Was there anything else that you wanted to ask about specifically EF Core or talking to databases?
Yeah, I was talking for quite a bit, but I was muted. The last thing I want to ask you about before I let you go is the title of the book is C# 9 and .NET 5.
Yes.
And the subtitle is Modern Cross-Platform Development. But below that, it says something interesting. It says, build intelligent apps, websites, and services with Blazor, ASP.NET Core, Entity Framework Core, using Visual Studio Code. What caused you to use Visual Studio Code and not Visual Studio?
That's an excellent question. Visual Studio Code is truly cross-platform. So there are versions that will run on Windows, on Mac OS, on Linux. I've got one installed on my Raspberry Pi, which is I've got both Raspberry Pi OS and Ubuntu 64-bit, and on my Apple Silicon Mac Mini that I with the M1 chip. So Visual Studio Code, it's a cross-platform code editor for building .NET applications, but also has great support for lots of other languages. It's very language agnostic, and it's particularly good for web development. Very strong support for JavaScript, TypeScript. And what I particularly like about Visual Studio Code is that it's so lightweight as well. It's not, it doesn't put up any barriers between you and the code and the underlying systems that you're working with. It's very lightweight in that respect as well. And I was quite pleased to read an Amazon review. Sorry to mention the evil company again. but I was quite pleased to read a review by a lady who lives in Australia. And she started by saying that Mark forces you to use Visual Studio Code instead of Visual Studio in the book. And I was a bit worried when I started reading that. But she says, but I'm glad that he did, because by needing to issue commands at the command line to even just create your initial projects using the templates, the project templates, and by sometimes having to maybe go into the C# project file and add in the references yourself, rather than using a graphical tool and clicking on buttons and doing that sort of stuff, she felt that she understood what was actually happening and learned a lot more from that. Now, and that was one of the reasons why I didn't want to force the readers to, because they can use other tools as well, including the kind of full version of Visual Studio. But that version is limited to Windows only. Although there is a Visual Studio for the Mac, it's and it's getting closer to the Windows version of Visual Studio. Still not quite there, and it's definitely not very popular with developers. I actually did a survey to about a month ago to try and find out a bit more about my readers and what tools they're using and what types of applications they want to build and what their plans are for the future and so on. And one of the interesting results of that was about the development tool. About 80% of my readers want to use and continue to use Visual Studio for Windows. So what I've done, what I'm doing at the moment when I'm now writing the sixth edition coming out in November, is I want to make it much more, my instructions, my step-by-step instructions in the book, much more agnostic about the tool, and even actually encourage a kind of equal weighting between Visual Studio 2022 for Windows and Visual Studio Code on any operating system. And I think by doing that, that will allow anyone to complete all the exercises in the book using the tool of their choice. So yes, 80% wanted Visual Studio for Windows. About 60% also wanted to use Visual Studio Code, but very, very few wanted to use Visual Studio for Mac. But the really interesting thing that stood out for me was JetBrains Rider, which is a third-party coding tool for C#. And about 25%, one in four developers, want to use that tool. So I bought myself a copy, and I'm going to include a few screenshots of that in the new.